Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony. It is Sunday, March 6, 2016. And yes, as you may know already, or if you're a first-time listener, I know we probably have a few. This is the left-leaning political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xers here in the gorgeous western part of the United States.
Yes.
More specifically, Denver, Colorado. And we are your hosts, Travis and Rachel.
Hi.
We have a very special guest and a returning guest, Brenna, today.
Hi.
Brenna just caucused, actually was a caucus captain for Bernie, as like I was. She was out in Kansas yesterday and helped with a huge win there for Bernie. And we're going to ask her about her experiences and what all that was about. So what was that all about, Brenna?
It was amazing, the turnout. Our local precinct went for Bernie. I think we had 6 delegates. In total, 4 went for Bernie. It was pretty much a 2-to-1 ratio as far as people that turned out.
Okay.
And as far as what happened, we all met at a like a ballroom that I think max capacity was 300, but there are at least 500 people there. And wow. The local Democratic Party that set it up, they set up like 75 chairs. They were not expecting us at all. And they actually ran out of registration forms, because in Kansas you can register the same day or change your affiliation.
Oh, interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, so they ran out of registration forms about 3/4 of the way through, so somebody had to like hold on and run down to like Xerox and wow. Copy everything. It was kind of a shit show a little bit. But yeah, so they were not expecting the turnout that they had. I particularly was working the front door with another lady, handing out intent to caucus cards so we could get information, just chatting people up.
Intent to caucus cards, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, it's these little cards, and actually they had us, when we were canvassing originally, giving these out so we could get information of people who were solid Bernie supporters in the area, but I canvassed and did one afternoon of canvassing and maybe went to, I don't know, 80 houses, talked to maybe 30 people. So I didn't know we were going to have this kind of turnout at all.
Wow.
And so these cards that they had us do is just basically, hey, Bernie wants your information so we can email you and kind of be a little obnoxious about it.
Sure.
But they also sign on there like, yes, I pledge to caucus for Bernie. And they can choose like, I want to volunteer, I want to bring 5 friends, that sort of thing.
Okay, cool.
But they had us fill those out at the beginning for people at the door, because they wanted to partially double check their count. And so if we got everybody at the door right away, that helped.
Sure.
And then the other reason was they just want the information so they can email and ask for money, I'm sure.
Yes.
You know how the political system works. Yeah, so I was doing that at the door. I had another girl who was handing out stickers. We were chatting with people, sending them, you know, in whichever line they needed to go to, depending on if they were registered Democrats or not, and that sort of thing. Inside, we had a team that set up a table, had all sorts of brochures, and like our lead guy brought popcorn for everybody and was like handing it out to random people.
Wow.
And yeah, we were really
the opposition. So what was Hillary's sort of team doing?
Oh, so that was kind of interesting. So me and the other person were out front for Bernie, and nobody came out for Hillary outside. And I thought that was interesting. And about an hour after we had been out there, they finally sent this very dowdy looking young girl out. And I'm not trying to like stereotype or say anything negative, but she was kind of like, just, like homeschooled or something, like, hi, are you here for Hillary? As we're over here like, hey, you're here for Bernie? Get over here. Let's talk. And she's like, hi, Hillary? Yeah? Okay, let me give you a sticker. And it's like wow. These tiny little H stickers, and that was it. It was wow. Very, very interesting. When we, as far as inside, the Hillary camp had a couple like hand-drawn signs and was very small and did not seem very well organized, where we've got a whole wall of like Bernie signs that go in your front yard and
yeah,
much more professional, I suppose. The lady who was in charge of the getting up and giving her little speech about Hillary was very sweet at the beginning. She did the whole, you know what, Bernie's great, Hillary's great, I like Hillary more, but don't forget, we just need a Democrat, please.
Yeah, just like just like I did.
Yep.
Yeah. And she is also apparently was the head of the Young Democrats of Kansas or something of that nature.
Cool. Okay.
Gave a nice little speech about Hillary. It wasn't probably as well spoken as I was expecting her to be, having a position where she probably speaks more often. But sure. She kind of ended the whole thing with a, and Hillary just wants everybody to remember that we should have love and we should love each other and not be hateful like the Republicans.
Fair point.
Sounds good.
We should do that.
Yeah. Like, that's a fair point. I'm not sure if that's what I would have ended my speech with. But
so we got a bunch of other process questions before you, but I just want to back up a little bit more. So there was no fire marshal there, like, ready to kick everybody out? Because that happened to Rachel.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, several other sites.
Yeah, that's why I was listening to you guys talking about that. And I was thinking as more and more people were coming in, I'm like, we are so beyond capacity. Fire marshal's going to show up. Never came.
Wow.
Wow.
It was standing room only.
Is that because it's a little more rural and the fire marshal's, like, got better things to do? Or he's a volunteer and it was his golf day or something?
I don't quite know how that system works, but I do know our fire marshal is based in Hayes, which is where the caucus was at. So it's not that he couldn't be there as far as distance is concerned.
Well, how many caucus sites in Hayes were there? Maybe he was kicking people out of other sites.
Or two. The other one was for the Republicans, though, and that was at our local VFW. And that was actually over by like 1 or 2 o'clock, which we didn't even close our doors.
There was no excuse for him not doing his job. In other words, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So what time did your caucus start and what time did you have to be finished by, or was there a time limit?
We opened doors at 1 and we had to have everybody in line by 3. We closed the doors at 3 and they told us it could take hours, and we didn't have any local people speak about running for anything.
Really?
It was like the head of the local party got up there and was like, hey, great that you're all here. It's great that we're involved. Let me get one person from each side to come up and talk about your candidate and we'll vote. And that was it. I was expecting something to
come up.
Yeah. Cause at my site, it was like an hour of speeches and candidates and all kinds of crap.
Yeah. So. We had a couple, but not that many. So you didn't actually then divide up into separate precincts. You were just one precinct and then you just got on different sides of the ballroom.
Okay. That's where it got really kind of, I mean, not shady, but they could have been done so much better. We had been, as caucus captains, we had been told that we need to put everybody when we were moving into sides, that we should put everybody into 10 by 10 squares so they're easy to count. There was not enough room for that because we had so many people. Wow. So everybody just kind of like, raise your hand if you're for Bernie, raise your hand if you're for Hillary. And somebody walked around and tallied. And I honestly don't think they probably got the tally correct, but
really?
Well, hold on a second, I'm a little confused now. So how many precincts met at this place?
Okay, so the whole district met at this one place,
right?
So
the same with us,
precincts in the district.
How right. many?
I don't know for sure. I'm okay. terrible.
But if you had to if you had to guess, how many precincts were there?
Probably at least 2 or 3. I'm not entirely sure.
So you guys
sure.
did not divide into precincts to take your vote. You just voted as a district.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you had one huge caucus in this ballroom, is what you're saying?
Yes, we had people driving like an hour and a half to get there.
And you were the one captain.
Oh no, there were like 3 other captains with us. Oh,
okay, well that's good. But so how many people total in? Okay, so I'm still trying to wrap my head because we did it completely differently. We broke up into like 15 different precincts of 50 or so people. You're saying you had one huge caucus and just smushed all the precincts together.
Yeah, and then counted people raising their
hands. Well, that would explain, like, we were looking at Maine on the Republican side. They only have 22 precincts.
Yeah.
And the Democrats have, like, 580, so they must be doing it that way.
Yeah.
They're just throwing hundreds of people in a room and doing show of hands. Yeah,
wow.
That's nuts.
Wow.
So you basically divided the room in half and then tried to count a show of hands that way. And then only 6 delegates, though, for that 300. How many people did you say?
There was probably closer to 500 people there, I would think.
So 500 people, you got 6 delegates out of those 500 people.
Yep.
So is it a much smaller delegation? Because we had 4 delegates out of 38 people.
And we had 4 delegates out of 55.
Well, the entire state of Kansas is only 33 delegates.
No, I'm talking county delegates.
Yeah.
Oh, county. Not entirely sure, actually. Nobody explained this to me. They're just like, go out there and count these people. I'm like, okay.
This seems like it was mishandled terribly. Maybe Kansas is just really different, but that's crazy.
How long has Kansas been doing caucuses? This is like a forever thing, right?
I know they did it at least through the last election cycle. I'm not sure beyond that. I wasn't really politically involved when I was younger.
Sure.
Sure. Okay. So what?
That sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, no, that sounds like an abject nightmare. So can you tell me about the demographics of the crowd? Old people, young people, men, women, what do you think?
I'd say 99% white people for sure.
Okay.
Sure.
It's Western Kansas.
Yeah.
I'd say there's a pretty even split between men and women, kind of a 50-50.
Okay.
And I was really surprised at the young voter turnout for sure. And obviously the majority of them are for Bernie.
Yeah.
And I'd say maybe about 40% of it was young, like people I would consider maybe in their early 20s to, early 30s.
And there's a college in Hays, Kansas, right?
Yes, Fort Hays.
Okay,
yeah,
Fort Hays.
Pull from
so do you feel like maybe a lot of those younger voters were coming from Fort Hays?
Some of them were. Some of them were not, though. There were a lot of really young families, too, that showed up with their babies, and they just brought their babies in, and they hung out and voted.
So I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. So 500 people got divided up into like sharks and the jets ready to rumble.
Yes.
And they all raised their hands, and somebody like went around and tried to garner like 300 hands to 200 hands and tried.
Yeah. Yeah. We did a tally. You just walked by. All right. Put your hand down. Put your hand down. Put your hand down and, make a tally.
And how many times did you do that?
And how many people were counting?
On the Bernie side, there were three of us that were going through and counting. I think I counted almost 100 people in my little section that I was in.
So you said like 100 here, and somebody else said like 85, and then someone said 63 or something like that.
We took a tally, and then we took it to the main table, and they counted it all up. Like I'm guessing I tallied about 100, but I didn't check because it was such pandemonium.
Okay, wow. And now were there Hillary caucus captains as far as you could tell?
There were at least two that I could tell.
Okay,
yeah.
So at least they had something there. Because my precinct didn't have any, but then it was only 40 people.
That's insane, Brenna.
Here's another question. How about the precinct chair? Would the precinct chair – there was only one precinct chair, or were there three precinct chairs like working together since it was three precincts mushed together?
I have actually no idea. The only guy who got up his name was Henry, and he used to be the mayor of Hays at one point. And I know he's in charge. Huh?
Yeah, go ahead.
And he was in charge of the local Democratic just group when they meet. I don't know if he's a precinct captain. I don't know any.
Well, was he the guy that was taking down the main numbers and ready to report them?
Yes. Uh-huh. We did take all of our numbers to our head person, and then he took it over to them.
Okay.
And does he seem to be the only guy doing that?
Yeah. I mean, they had a table of people like checking in, but other than that, he seemed to be the only one doing it.
So for the whole district, I don't know. Every state rule is different.
Yeah.
Like in Colorado, you need a precinct chair for each precinct.
Yep.
But I guess they just sent one guy out for the whole district.
Yeah.
And they were expecting about 100 people and got 500, apparently, from what Brenna is telling me.
Yeah.
Or less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if the six delegates that you were given were not actually county delegates or precinct delegates the way that they are in Colorado.
They just went straight to state delegates?
But those are just straight delegates. Yeah, state delegates. Because there's six out of 500
Brenna,
people.
Do you know how that works? Is there a county convention, then a CD convention, then a state convention, and all that jazz? And then were you in charge at all of signing up the people who were delegates? And how did the delegate selection process work?
Right. So, okay, at the very end, everybody like, okay, we got your vote. Bernie's going to get 4. Hillary's going to get 2. Sign out on your way out. And everybody just left. And they tried to sign out on their way out, and like 90% of the crowd left. And then so whoever was left, it's like, all right, who of you guys want to be a delegate?
Right, right.
Come over here. And then we just kind of stood in a circle and each talked about why you wanted to be a delegate or didn't. And our Bernie person just like picked a couple like, okay, you've been here and you've been helping a lot, so you can be one or you can be one or
well,
whatever.
You're supposed to vote technically if there's more than four people. So was that not necessary, or did they just skip a vote and the chair or the caucus captains just sort of picked people? And was anybody pissed about that? I mean, how did that exactly work?
Yeah, now that I think about that, that's a little sketchy. Basically, the guy who was running our Bernie stuff, he was like, okay, we have 4. And he's like, I would prefer these people because they have been caucus captains. They've been canvassing all this stuff. Does everybody agree to that? So we sort of voted,
okay.
I guess.
But did everybody agree? Did anybody say, no, John Smith shouldn't be a delegate. I want to be a delegate. Nobody
did
that.
No, the only lady who spoke up, she was like, well, I really kind of wanted to be a delegate, but I know you guys have been working really hard and I didn't, so I'm okay with that.
All right. Well, that's not that big a deal then.
Yeah. Okay. So then did you have to fill out any additional paperwork as caucus captain, or how did that work?
No, I just had to take the tally, and then I had to help get people to sign out on their way that they did vote for Bernie. Yeah. Other than that, I didn't have to do anything else.
So overall, do you feel like this was fair? Do you feel like the count was correct? What are your overall impressions of this caucus system that you have?
I don't know if the count was correct down to the numbers, but I feel like it was fair as far as, yeah, it definitely was a 2-1. So the 4-2 seems like it was okay.
With the way you round up delegates and the number they had, I'm sure even if they boffed it by 5 or 10, it was fine. And yeah, you didn't have to do any coin flips. So this is where it gets weird, because I went on the podcast with David Waldman and said the coin flips aren't a big deal, because I was thinking in terms of precincts of 40 delegates assigning four, but if it's 500 people and you're assigning six delegates, and what if they came to a 0.5 there and flipped a coin?
Yep.
Then it's a much, much bigger deal.
Yeah.
And if that kind of thing happened in Iowa, then it is more interesting. But obviously doesn't sound like there were any coin flips where you were. There were no 0.5 delegate math to deal with.
Nope, not at all.
Yeah.
Wow. That is a crazy different experience than what we have here. How do you feel about caucuses? You think they're good? Do you want primaries? What do you think?
I will say the couple people I talked to, especially the people who have never caucused before, who are younger coming out for Bernie, they were like, oh, we can't just walk in and vote.
Yeah.
Like, no, you have to stay for the whole thing. I'm like, oh, we really can't just walk in and vote and like cast a ballot. Like, no, that's not how it works.
There's rumors that today in Maine, some places are so overstaffed or so busting at the seams that they're just doing that. They're just like, here, put your preference down and we'll count it up later and we'll pretend it was like a caucus.
Yep.
Wow.
So, and I'm guessing Kansas did it for the same reason as us and everybody else, to save money.
Yeah.
But
especially
I don't know how.
Brown Baxter governor. Don't have any money.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another thing. Do you even know if it's funded by the counties or the state? Or I mean, the parties or the state? Like, Who runs caucuses
by necessity are funded and run by the parties.
Yeah, but
they're not official elections.
Right, but in some states, the parties get money directly from the state to hold their elections.
Right.
Whereas Colorado, for the most part, they don't.
No, we don't. That's why we don't have a primary anymore.
Do you know anything about that, Brenna, in Kansas?
I don't, but knowing how we have budget issues, I highly doubt they would allocate any money to do that at all as a state.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. I agree with that.
Wow.
So did you do the things that the Bernie campaign said, like, well, I mean, I guess that's not an issue, because if the Bernie person there was like, these people are going to be county delegates because they've done it before, then you know that they are going to be there for this convention and that convention, and they're not going to go out of town, and they're available for all these dates and all that other stuff.
Right. They did discuss that. Like, you're going to be here, you're going to be available, you're not a college student who's going to leave in three weeks or anything.
They
didn't
have, like, did you guys do alternates at all?
Yes, we do have. We did have, I think, four alternates just in case. Yeah.
And do you have a role going forward in the caucus process in Kansas?
I don't, because I don't know when I'm going to be moving.
Right.
Otherwise, I would have jumped in there, but I'm like, I may be moving soon, so I'm not going to do that.
Very smart, Brenna. It didn't even occur to me till just now.
So how many speeches were there pro and against? And this is, to me, seems like herding cats. And I know Kansans in general are
obedient people.
Yes. They have Midwestern values. And,
yes.
And you know, that when somebody says everybody quiet down now, they typically would. And so I that would be easier than like even in Aurora trying
or
to do that.
Yeah.
But
no.
So in Miami, forget about it. It's like herding cats. So, yeah. So how many speeches were there? Was there just one and one?
Just one for each side, and that was it.
Wow.
I'm like,
so
okay.
Wow.
Because we couldn't even limit it to that in our little 38-person
group.
No,
we had 55 people and probably had 10 people speak. No joke. So that's crazy.
So it seemed like I guess it works in Kansas better, but just because Kansans are more – built to do that, get 500 people in a room and divide them up half and half, and it'll go smoothly.
If I'm being honest, my mind is blown by this story. is no.
Yeah, it's not a one size fits all system,
crazy.
Right?
I know.
We
exactly. kind of
figured like we did our caucus and we thought, okay, this is how
That's
caucuses
how it works.
Work. No, this is how caucuses worked in the greater Denver area.
Correct.
Could have been completely different in other parts of Colorado.
Yeah.
Definitely, obviously, it was
different in Kansas.
I can't wait to hear from Molly's friend from Nebraska, see what he's got to say.
So do you feel like that the overwhelming sort of campaign support that Bernie had and the organization and all of that that you saw present, not only at the caucuses, but in the weeks coming up to it when you were canvassing, do you think that helped him get the win in Kansas? Or what's your opinion about why Kansans voted for Bernie?
That's a very nuanced question, actually, or answer. I feel like the DC organizer who was in the area, he was going between where we were at. He was going down to Wichita, which is southeast Kansas. He was going up to Kansas City, which is northeast Kansas.
Oh, so it was Jack White.
Sorry,
no. That was a dumb joke. Sorry.
He seemed to be very well organized. He was constantly in contact with us. He even to the point where he had burner phones for each area code he was in.
You get
in,
it, burner phones
wow.
for Bernie? Sorry, I just can't stop. I'm on a roll.
So people would answer his calls because they like, oh, that's a local number. Let me answer that to the point where they are doing that. It was very well organized. And I feel like that had definitely something to do with it. I didn't get a chance to phone bank because I work evenings and they were doing it during the evenings.
Right.
Sure.
But they were phone banking every night for 3-4 hours every night. Somebody was always bringing pizza. Like, they were really on the ball and super
so they
organized.
Had tremendous infrastructure in Kansas to get that win.
Yes, at least out in my area. I don't know about eastern Kansas or anything.
Well,
and
yeah,
he did well everywhere.
That makes
in
sense.
Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah, so, he actually won all of the precincts in Kansas, I just read today.
So did the local Bernie people, like they did with me, send you like a lot of material to read over and prep you pretty well, and you have a webinar to see how the caucus was supposed to work, and did you get all of that information from the Sanders campaign like I did?
Our local DC organizer called me like the day before, like, hey, we talked about being a caucus captain. Do you still want to do that?
The like, day before,
yeah?
huh? I got at least like 2 days, but okay.
Well, I mean, it was a couple days before. I don't mean exactly the day before.
No,
but
it was
about
the same. It was about the same then, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, you still want me to do that? Okay, sure. And he's like, okay, we're meeting at the coffee shop tomorrow for an hour. And so we all went to the coffee shop for an hour and just talked about it and read some stuff, and that was it. We didn't do a webinar. We didn't do any of that.
Well, yeah, if you're going to meet in person, that's fine. I think with here, it's sort of, yeah, you can meet up, but people are more likely to just like want to do it on their own.
And it's worth sprawling, too,
in a big place.
Yeah, okay. And so then the other part of that is, you know, when people that don't live in Kansas talk about Kansas, they talk about it as an incredibly conservative state, right?
It's actually not that conservative as people think.
I know. I want you to talk about that for a minute.
Socially, it is. People are still very believe that abortion is a voting issue and that sort of thing.
Right.
It is conservative in that, right? But they also recognize that voting on the social issues is not always the most important thing, because these are farmers. They have to work hard for a living, at least Western Kansas.
Sure.
And they recognize when the government needs to help out a little bit. And they honestly, I think part of it is partially Brownback's fault, because we've seen what money does to government.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah,
but, the Koch brothers.
But then how did he get reelected?
Oh, well, that's a whole nother issue. I can go into that for about an hour.
maybe another time, but go on, Brenna. I sorry to cut you off.
Well, they're all working class people, and I think they recognize from Bernie that he grew up in a working class family, and he understands how he wants to help people. He doesn't want to give them handouts. He just wants to help them.
Do you feel like farm subsidies are a part of it? Because that is sort of a government program that helps farmers that could be considered socialist or whatever. Do you think that that's any part of it or no?
That might be part of it. Actually, during the Depression era, Kansas was like the seat of socialism in the United States.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if people are still kind of holding on to some of that, especially Western Kansas. We've been in a very bad drought for a very long time. Many of our cities are getting smaller because we have no water anymore because we pull from the Ogallala Aquifer, which is under Western Kansas, and it's going dry. It's to the point where even Hayes, which is a big university city, they are predicting to be completely out of water from 10, 15 years from now.
Wow.
So
people
have to think about, like, we're not getting rain and we are not able to irrigate our fields. So they do think about subsidies and that sort of thing because the crops are not what they used to be.
Right. Right. And so, and to your point about Brownback, like, people have seen what conservative economic policy has done to your state.
Yes, especially coming right off of Sebelius onto Brownback. It's like, holy crap. Yeah, know, sure.
Well, you know, to be sort of realistic about it, though, looking at the numbers, still twice as many Republicans showed up to caucus yesterday as Democrats. And that could be the Trump effect or what have you. And it's probably doubtful that as far as a presidential race, the state's going blue anytime soon. But can we hold on, even if Bernie winds up not being the nominee, which looks kind of likely right now, do you think the young people can still be mobilized? And you think finally the tide can be turned? Because I know other people in Kansas, too, have been telling me for years, this right-wing Tea Party fever is going to break soon. Kansas really isn't like this. We're going to wake up. And it's still just not quite happening. And, you know, do you feel like it's finally going in that direction? Is Kansas going to start to return to some sense of normalcy and be the moderate state it was for decades and decades?
It's really hard to say because a lot of the young people, like I graduated in 05. The majority of the people that I went to high school with are no longer in the state.
Yeah,
or they live in a very liberal area like Kansas City.
Right.
They just don't want to deal with it and they want to leave. And I think that's the main problem. If you could entice those people to stay, I think it could go back to being a moderate state. But everybody's just sick of the bullshit and they don't want to deal with it. And so they just leave instead.
And
so,
what is their incentive to stay if they're the only one that stays in this incredibly conservative, horrible place that – and not to call it horrible, but you know what I mean in terms of like social values and things like that.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to make people stay because it's not in their personal interest to do so if there's not a wider wave of it happening.
Absolutely. I mean, just for an example, we were the Democratic caucus site we were at had protesters out on the corner across the way protesting abortion.
Wow. Like, really?
Yeah. We had anti-abortion protesters in front of our caucus site because Democrats believe in abortion. Like, just, it's terrible. And nobody wants to deal with that. They don't want to deal with somebody going, oh, you like this, you support this candidate. Well, they support abortion, so you're a terrible person.
You're a baby killer. Right.
Yeah.
And for the LGBT community, it's got to be a really terrible place to be, especially in your youth.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many people I was so surprised showed up with, like, the Bernie, I don't know if you've seen the Bernie shirts that have the rainbow Bernie on them. Mm-hmm. I saw a couple of those. People with really weird hair colors I've never seen in my life, and Hayes is a small town.
Right?
Well, my people are
like,
here.
Where have you been my whole life?
Yeah, there was a girl I met in Colorado who had like green hair and purple hair. And
yeah, we had a rainbow hair at ours.
And she was from Omaha. She had just moved from Omaha.
Wow,
and
nice.
So there's... there's your people. They're out there in the plains, but they're all leaving.
You gotta get to a Bernie rally to find them, apparently.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly.
Well, that's great stuff, Brenna. I really appreciate that. And it's sort of eye-opening where we kind of thought, like, we know what these caucuses are all about now. Like, well, no, it kind of depends where you
are. Yeah, that's amazing. Do you have anything you want to say, closing thoughts or anything we missed?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I feel like it was well-organized from the party perspective, or not the party, sorry, from the candidates' perspectives. I think the party just kind of screwed up and not having enough space for us. But
right.
Well, did anybody leave? Like, did it take so long that people got grumpy or felt disenfranchised, or did everybody pretty much stick around and tough it out and make it work?
Mostly everybody stayed. I had a couple people run out to be like, I gotta go get a soda, I've gotta go have a cigarette or whatever, but they came back in because they had armbands so they could.
Okay.
And they made it back.
Armbands.
So, I mean, it wasn't too bad.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow. Well, that was really, really illuminating, Brenna. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us all about that insane experience.
You're absolutely welcome.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a break here, and Rachel and I are going to come back and talk about the passing of Nancy Reagan, the primaries and caucuses that are happening today, and some other closing thoughts. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Before my eyes.
and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We are now going to move on to some topical topics. Is that redundant?
A little bit.
Topical topics. First of all, Nancy Reagan passes away today at 94 years of age.
Yes.
And as usual, social media has some opinions here and there.
Yeah.
I grew up during the height of the Reagan era. That was all me being a kid in the Reagan years. So say no to drugs, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
I was there. I have a really, I think, funny podcast about it on my other podcast called Yeah, I Remember That, about growing up in the war on drugs where Americans were obsessed with this idea that drug pushers were going to find eight-year-old suburban white kids and get them all hooked on smack. But yeah, Nancy Reagan's passing is eliciting a lot of responses, obviously from the different corners of the internet. She's, of course, lionized as a goddess by the right. Some on the left are saying she's a horrible, evil person because of all the bad things Reagan did. I fall somewhere, I don't even want to say the middle, because I really don't like to hold first ladies or family members responsible unless they were directly involved. And I know Nancy was directly involved in certain things that she could be held to task for. But generally speaking, from what I know of her, she was a little more moderate and maybe even at times pushed back against some of the harder right things that her husband was always pushing forward. But Rachel's done a little research here and she's got some things to add about that.
So I was 5 and a half when the Reagans left the White House. So I don't really have any direct memory of them being president. Not that I would have cared at five. But I can tell you that even going into the 90s, and well into the 90s, you know, Just Say No to Drugs, War on Drugs, that campaign, and her being associated with it was very much in our minds. We understood it. We knew who she was. We knew who Reagan was. So she had sort of a lasting impact as far as that goes. Some of the things that I learned today were probably most of you out there remember, but for the millennials out there who didn't grow up during this era, I thought it was kind of interesting. So Reagan was, of course, the governor of California before he became the president. He had one unsuccessful presidential run. Well, he didn't even get the nomination, right, in 76.
76, yeah.
Yeah. And then in 80, he did. When they took the White House, Nancy Reagan had this interesting goal of refurbishing the White House. She wanted it to be suitable. She said something like, the American people own this house. It should be something they're proud of. And so she hired a bunch of people to come in and repaint the walls and redo the floors and add antiques and all of this stuff. But she did it via private donation rather than taxpayer funds. So she got some of her rich buddies from Hollywood, because remember, her and Reagan were both actors.
Mm-hmm. Not very good actors, but actors.
Yeah. To donate money to refurbish the White House. That was something most people were kind of fine with, but when it came to details about some of the specific donations, including the ever-famous china, right? She replaced the White House's china at a cost of $209,000.
Is that all?
Yeah. People got a little upset, not because they were paying for it, because they weren't, but because it was a time of great economic recession. And
in the height of Reaganomics, we need to tighten our belts.
Yeah, people were really hurting, and to watch her, she was getting also all of these, she was really into fashion, and so she was getting all of these dresses and gowns and outfits and things loaned, quote, to her by these famous designers that she never gave back. And then she said, well, I'm going to donate it to a museum later. But those were all tax-deductible contributions made to them. So people were like, ultimately, it did cost the taxpayers money. So there's a lot of controversy around sort of her work in making the image of the White House and her own personal image look good. But to her defense, she didn't spend government money technically on any of that. She got private donations to do that. So there's that. She was really involved in something called the Grandparents Foster System, Foster Act, something like that, which was a way of allowing grandparents to take care of children that their children had that they couldn't care for. And then just some little interesting couple side notes. After Reagan's assassination, she got really paranoid.
Assassination attempt.
Attempt, I'm sorry.
In 1981.
Yes. She got really paranoid. She later wrote in her memoir that every time he would leave, she would get this panic attack, essentially. So she, like, hooked up with the events and scheduling and planning people and demanded to know basically every detail of his day, every day, where he was going to be. And eventually kind of got so crazy about it that she contacted a psychic who would then tell her what good days were, neutral days were, and bad days were, according to Reagan's astrological chart.
Mm-hmm.
And she would try to restrict his schedule based on what that astrologer said.
Now, did she put, like, a big zodiac wheel, like Zat had in the Oval Office, and sort of turn it for him? And
I mean, really, to read about it, it seems like she had a tremendous amount of influence on him, on his schedule.
So did he actually went along with the astrology wheel schedule?
Often.
Often, not yeah. always, though.
No, no. Okay. Sometimes, you know, national security
things
and what have
up,
you. But
you know, Gorbachev pops into town. You
right.
know,
that was happen. The other really big thing she did was she hosted Khrushchev, right?
Gorbachev.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well, Wikipedia might be wrong.
Mikhail Gorbachev.
For the first time, like, a Soviet leader had been to America, and it was very important to her that, I guess, the sort of lasting image we have of her is it was really important to her that everything looked just so, that the image of not only her, but her husband and America and the White House was prim and proper and perfect.
And white.
And white. Although she wore a lot of red. And so that's something that's sort of lasting for her, that she, that was one of her major contributions. Also just, she seemed to be very influential on him in terms of even policy. Like, he really listened to her. And she had a lot to do with his staffing when he was running for president. She had a couple of his chiefs of staff fired and replaced. Like, she was very intimately involved in his campaign, and to some extent to his presidency. So I think that's interesting.
She gets a lot of flack from her because Reagan basically ignored the AIDS crisis when it erupted
yep.
during his reign, and a big reason for that was at the height of the AIDS crisis, it was basically assumed to be just a gay disease, period.
Yep, gay cancer.
And he was, you know, he just thought homosexuality was an abomination.
Mm-hmm.
He hated it, so he basically felt justified. I mean, even if that was true and it just was a gay disease, it's pretty horrifying that you would just sit on your hands and let people die horribly without
an entire generation of gay men.
Yeah. But even worse than that, the public health ramifications of, guess what, it's not a gay-only disease, and, you know, we obviously found that out in
I can't remember
later.
The exact number of years, but it's a shocking number of years before Ronald Reagan ever said AIDS out loud
yeah.
as president of the United States during this health crisis. And it wasn't just him. It was his directed agencies, the HHS,
well, sure.
and
he,
all
he,
of those.
He
I mean,
appointed all those people.
Yeah, there was absolutely nothing done. And it's, you know, yeah.
There's a good
it's
movie
a human
about that,
rights.
Coley and the band played on.
Yep, that one and also The Normal Heart. There's a lot of movies about it. But
to the point of Nancy, she's getting a lot of flack today saying that she was sort of part of that. And there's some anecdotal evidence, some things written that might not be entirely true, that she actually pushed Reagan, her husband, a little bit more to be more invested in it, and she did care a little more deeply, and ultimately just couldn't move him on that. But it's conflicting, and I don't know if you read anything to that end.
No.
I've read both sides that said she was right there with Reagan, just turning her head and calling it a gay disease, and then on the other side, there's plenty of stories out there that no, she did care, and it did trouble her deeply, and she did try to move him on it, and he basically just ignored her on that.
Right. I mean, I don't have any facts to support either side of that. I would say that if it were my husband or partner, I would be yelling and screaming and swinging from the rafters.
Well, sure, but you would have never married Ronald Reagan in the first place.
No, it's very true. Ultimately, I don't know that we can hold her accountable for the sins of her husband and his administration.
No, no, no. I don't think you can. And then more to that, and I've said this before with the death of Scalia, I understand where my liberal friends are coming from, not lionizing this woman or even coming out and saying good riddance or whatever you want. That's just not my style. I'm not going to do that. She was very influential in politics. She was a very influential lady. I think for most things, her heart was in the right place. I'll even be controversial and say even the war on drugs, I don't think she initially saw it as a way to incarcerate a lot more poor and black people.
Yeah.
I thought she legitimately, maybe misguidedly, thought that she was going to help keep a bunch of 10-year-old white kids from getting hooked on coke and smack.
Yeah.
But ultimately it had these awful effects.
Yeah, ramifications for decades to come. Yes.
But there were parts of the Say No to Drugs that did, even initially, directly cause some issues. So, yeah, it's a mixed bag. But I'm not going to dance on the lady's grave. I will say rest in peace. And that's just how my take and my style.
My only other criticism would be the sort of what Dan Savage calls the moral bankruptcy of conservatives, which is everyone on that side, and her and Reagan included, were very much against stem cell research and all of that stuff because it's against God and it's against science.
Well, didn't she change her position?
That's exactly what I'm going to get to. Yeah. Once it was discovered that he had Alzheimer's and that embryonic stem cell research could potentially cure or prevent Alzheimer's, suddenly all the moral ramifications of embryonic stem cell research don't matter because she's personally affected by the outcome,
right,
and now she's a champion of it. So, you know, it's Megyn Kelly saying it doesn't really matter if people are sexist, and then as soon as Donald Trump says something about her, everyone's outraged, right? It's the moral relativism of conservatives.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point, Rachel.
Yeah.
But there was more than that. There's been several things in the last 5 to 10 years that stakes that she's claimed that are much more moderate or even leftward in terms of some things on gay rights, as I recall, maybe a few things like stem cell research. There's been a few things that have gotten the Fox News-osphere sort of gotten their panties in a bunch over things Nancy has said. So
their conservative queen isn't quite as conservative as they thought.
Yeah,
neither
yeah,
was Reagan. If you look at for conservatives now versus conservatives, Reagan.
Obviously, but.
So, Reagan isn't even a Reagan conservative anymore.
Right. It's a mixed bag. Okay. Nancy Reagan, not necessarily a saint, but not a devil either.
She's not my hero.
It's more complicated
certainly,
than that.
Certainly. But, you know.
And we'll just say, you know, rest in peace, very influential lady. And,
yeah,
you know, did some good, did some not so good, and we move on.
Yeah.
So moving on.
Yes.
We got the Puerto Rico Democratic primary today, and Marco Rubio won big.
Republican
primary today, and Marco Rubio won huge.
Yeah.
So get ready, boys and girls, for 3 and 4 days of Rubio mania.
Yeah, because what did he get, 23 delegates?
He's going to get probably all 23 Puerto Rican delegates.
So that'll sweep him right to the nomination.
That's going to sweep him right to the nomination, because people in the heartland and all over who don't even realize that Puerto Ricans can vote in a primary.
Yep.
Because they can't vote in the
general.
Like,
wait, that's not a state.
Right.
And now people are making all these projections about Florida. Well, if he won Puerto Rico, he'll win Florida.
There's a lot of Puerto Ricans in Florida, but not enough to carry
an entire giant state.
No, and he's had a horrible night last night, and he's losing there. Yeah, he pretty much has to win Florida to have a chance. Well, even if he wins Florida. <It's>, look, the media is in love with Marco Rubio. We know that. He's their shining white knight, and so he won a primary today, his second one, and we're going to hear for 3 days how the Rubio comeback is on. It's Rubio mania. It's Rubio momentum. It's what else do you want to say?
Robot Rubio? No, they're not going to
say
that.
Robo Rubio? Has he been oiled up and ready to go?
I guess so. I don't see it happening. But he did win Puerto Rico. That's a note. What other caucuses or primaries did we have today?
We got the main Democratic caucus. Early word is that Bernie's expected to do really well. We got caucusites busting out at the seams. I'm going to take a look real quick, see if we have any results in. So if he does kick some serious butt in Maine today, he could maybe tie Hillary Clinton or come out with a net positive result, which is nice, but in the grand scheme of things doesn't mean a whole lot. He really needed to gain ground,
yeah,
if nothing else. Let's see what's going on in Maine real quick. So we got nothing
reported
yet.
0% reporting.
I don't know. I think the caucuses closed there maybe at 7 or so. So I think we got a while yet.
Yeah. And then they've got a Democratic debate tonight in Flint, Michigan. So that'll be interesting. On the Republican side.
That was yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Ted Cruz won. Huge.
Cruz won.
So we have nothing. They have nothing reporting yet on that. So we won't be able to tell you about that till
later.
But
it's Maine. It's close to Vermont. He's very popular there. I think he's going to win real big. But there's only 20-something
delegates at state.
Yeah, it's a tiny state. So.
Which is what we thought was so interesting is that according to the New York Times elections map, Maine has, on the Democratic side, has 593 precincts. Which seems gigantic for such a small state with a relatively small population. And on the Republican side, they only had 22 precincts. So that's nuts, right? Or do you think it's just...
Yeah, I don't know how it works. I mean, maybe some precincts in Maine are just going to be like two or three people. It's just the way they divide it up, I guess. I don't necessarily know that there's going to be 593 precinct chairs around the state today. And I think it'll be like – my guess is it's going to be like it was in Kansas, that they're going to have 20 precincts or 50 precincts meet at this one place.
Room. Yeah.
And that'll be 300, 400 people, and they may just have one chair tallying everything. Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to get somebody from Maine who wants to talk about.
I don't know anybody from Maine. If anybody out there is from
Maine. If I had
known,
I would have lined up guests at each caucus state to tell us how their caucuses ran.
I mean, we will next year or next time. But
we're going to get the guy from
If we have any listeners from Maine that want to tell us about their experience, just email us, irreverenttestimony@gmail.com, or tweet us at irreverentduo, and we'll talk.
Yeah, from any caucus state. Yeah. If you have caucus or if you have a caucus coming up, I don't know how many caucuses are left.
Yeah.
But
if you have any insight into the ones that have happened, if you have a really different experience from Brenna's in Kansas, or just let us know.
Yeah, hit us up and let us know what that's all about. Anything else you want to discuss before we sign off into the great white yonder?
I don't think so. I think we are going to watch the debate tonight. Is that right?
Yeah, why not?
We'll mostly be looking for tone there. I'm not going to learn anything new. Tone Loke, exactly. He's going to be on stage.
He's a moderator.
I'm not going to learn anything new about Hillary or Bernie tonight, but I just want to see kind of the tone because of the primaries that have just happened in caucuses.
And where we are in terms of Hillary really staking out a significant lead at this point.
And is Bernie going to start to address things, not frame them economically? He's in Flint, Michigan. Let's not frame the Flint water crisis economically, please.
No, I think it's fair too, a little bit.
Yep. Well, how's that going for him?
I don't care how it's going for him. I care more about what needs to be addressed.
Yeah, he needs to specifically address some of the issues that happened there and not be like, well, if we just fixed...
If we just campaign finance reform, then, you know, then the lead will disappear out of the pipes, right?
Yeah.
Well, no. But, yeah, and I would like him to have a much stronger message in terms of this is a result of institutional racism.
Yes.
Sure, Rick Snyder didn't go in and say, I'm going to poison all the black people's water because I hate black people.
No.
But he decided we'll save a few bucks because those people in Flint will never vote for me anyway.
And when he found out, he didn't give a shit because it was all a bunch of black people. He didn't do anything. He didn't take action. It took years.
Mm-hmm.
And outside federal,
And you have the people on the other side defending him, saying he's doing a good job, and I hope they rip the other side to shreds tonight.
I hope so, too. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll keep you guys up to date after that. And then we've got, like we said last night, some very exciting podcasts coming up this week, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah, we're going to have another caucus guy from Nebraska on, tomorrow or something?
As soon as we can get a hold of him, if he can.
Wednesday's Will McLeod.
Yep.
Friday is Greg Dworkin.
Yep.
We have our local state lady who's running for state rep District 30.
Against Joanne Winholtz.
Against Joanne Winholtz, hopefully on sometime this week.
Yep.
And then, we got a bunch of other stuff in the pipeline, so it's going to be very exciting. Stay tuned.
If you have questions for Will McLeod or Greg Dworkin, Will McLeod is going to be talking to us about kind of what we're calling intersectional liberalism, but specifically LGBT issues. So if you guys have specific questions or comments about that, please let us know. And then Greg, of course, is great on KGRO. He does a lot of poll stuff, but we're going to have a lot of interesting stuff to talk to him about.
With Greg, I think we're going to focus on the value of incrementalism in pushing forward liberal agendas and also the great GOP crack-up of 2016, which I can't wait to talk to Greg
about.
Me
too. So if you guys have questions or comments for him, please let us know. Otherwise, I think that's it.
That's going to do it. As usual, this has been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and enjoy your weekend. Or by the time you hear this, enjoy your Monday.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Original, take a stand, you are free to say no. Don't let a
You know, getting into drugs and being high is a real stupid thing to do. Being original, say no to peer pressure. Say no may be the smartest thing you ever do.
You gotta